I think we're being recorded again, Mr. Chairman, so we're ready to go.
We're back in session, and I guess it's time for the main course. Glenn, you're going to... Everybody has a copy of the draft MOU at this point. So just walk through it. The idea is you speak up freely.
Okay.
However, you've already been cautioned on the terminology that can and cannot be used.
Well, we're refraining from...
Except for that one technical term.
That was a technical term.
That's right.
Well, Glenn, I think, first off, we really just had a very few minutes to go over this. IAB and Susan arrived last night and didn't have access to this until this morning at about 8:15. So I hope you'll indulge us with some questions that may be answered in here by virtue of our lack of familiarity with the concept. I know we're all real excited. I think this is going to take a tremendous amount of teamwork and cooperation. And in thinking about this project, I was sort of thinking about, you know, what is the town's goal? What is your primary goal? And what is our goal? And I think they're very compatible. And I think as long as this turns out to be a very vibrant, thriving, energetic, well-received, top-quality project, both of our goals are going to be achieved. Having said that, I know what I assume your goal was, but it may help me if y'all would articulate what you primarily want to achieve out of this whole project.
Well,
that's a first.
I think you said it, that we really want a thriving project that it becomes a catalyst to make downtown, both a crossroads and a destination for the town and the region. We want to change the language of downtown, and we've been aware for a long time that our assets there have been underutilized, and we've gone through a long, meticulous process, starting with Mayor Waldorf in the mid-90s to come to a community consensus on what we want to achieve. I'll take another minute, and we have very progressive land use, transportation, and utility planning in southern Orange County. And, the low-hanging fruit has been picked. We've sprawled to the edge of our urban service boundaries at the same time as we've enhanced our transportation system. We have a utility boundary, and it's become... I've known it for a long time, but it's become so that the opportunities for significant development projects in this town are downtown. And it's taken a lot of movement from the community to come to accept that, but we're looking for projects that will enhance livability and quality of the experience in the downtown. And the council is very interested in the residential component of this, and we're very confident in the residential component. And we are really intrigued with your experience and confidence in the non-residential component of it. So,
I think from looking at what my job is and what your job is, it's important that the town's historic culture, and by culture I'm talking about the way, as Bill put, it's a very careful analysis of anything that's built. Developers are not allowed, as everybody knows, to walk in and close a building and build whatever they want to. And we want to maintain that culture in which gets into the approval rights, which you all recognized in your proposal. I've seen the tapes of your meetings where you presented the design, and you know, I see total compatibility on that issue. You all have been very receptive and have listened to the council. The other thing that is extremely important is that these are stewards of the money that doesn't belong to them. It's not their money, it's the citizens' money. And so it's very, very important that they minimize risk. Risk that as a developer, if it was two developers in a joint venture, you would have a different scenario. One of the things I've learned, and I represent primarily developers that have been building public-private things for municipalities for a fair number of years, is no matter how much, no matter what steps are taken to protect the money and protect the municipalities, there's a group of people out there who are on pro-life action, and they don't raise anything, so we're sensitive to that. And so that's an overlay, and any type of a deal that involves the private sector and the public sector is the fact that the public sector is one, it's all open to the world to see. And it's difficult from a developer's standpoint in that you're negotiating the public to do something. I mean, it's private now, but eventually this gets out, and that makes it difficult. But it's really critical that the risk be minimized from the town standpoint. And that means we're shoving them over to you. I mean, but you understand that.
Yeah, we do.
Holly, is that complete tattooing answer or a follow-up?
I want to add something to
that. Well, it's funny, as Bill was talking, I was thinking about this is a major deal in Taproot. And the previous major deals in Taproot, you know, we continue to live with, you're talking about building on top of one of them. And some of the major deals in the past haven't gone well. I mean, to be blunt, the parking deck, the bank, what is now the Bank of America building, University Square, are sort of the big departures from, you know, one and two story downtown buildings, and none of them were particularly successful in any way. I mean, I don't say any more about that. And it's really important to me, and I know the rest of the council, that we look back on this as a successful thing and be able to, because we're going to live with it. And that's really critical. And I mean, there's going to be, like you said, people throw rocks at you for the money, the people are going to throw rocks at you for anything that's new. And basically, what I've learned is they just throw rocks at us because they can fix. But it's really important that we do a good job with this in terms of the basis happening.
Currently, I could add a view. I think all three sites are located very close to Franklin Street in the 100% corner. I see Lot 5 as being a linchpin to the link east and west Franklin Street. So I think all three sites are really quite a profound impact on the downtown shopping experience and downtown in general. So it's really important that they do a great job developing.
I'll just add, I think the point that the financial security from the more we can defend the financial side of the deal, I think the more we can push the program. So, you know, somebody may not like the facade, or they may not like the way it looks. It's a lot easier to disagree with them about that if you are on impeccable financial footing on the deal. And I think that is of paramount importance for us.
From my point of view, the council is putting into play community assets that are extremely valuable and are risking the mythology of the town. And mythology is intangible, and intangibles are very hard to maintain. They take a lot of effort. And so Cam's right, this has got to be done just exactly right. And if it's going to be as vibrant as Bill wants it to be, that'll help make it right. But we cannot forget those intangibles, and we've got to be careful about not screwing it up. When people ask me what the biggest responsibilities we have for planning and land use management in Chapel Hill is not to screw it up, because it's one of the prettiest places in the country. It's one of the most interesting places in the country. And somebody can make an awful lot of money here in the long run, and we think you're the people who have figured out that that's possible. And you're going to be making investments, not for the short run, but for the long run, and not just for this development, but for your careers, and not just for this one project for your company, but for opening in the North Carolina. So you've got your own very important things at stake. In addition to your money, you've got your intangibles at stake, too. And that's what will make this work for us, I think.
Well, that helps. In thinking about this, how do you make this work? I think we've come up with different variations of the structure. And the structure that is in this memorandum of understanding was not one of the variations that we came up with. So I've had a lot of questions about the structure. And Glenn, if you do want to go ahead and we can start going through, but I do have...
Yeah, because we can get to the structure very quickly.
Could I just point out that the copy we handed out was revised from the one you all got yesterday. We met at 8 o'clock, 8:30 this morning. We made a few little minor changes. So if you would, we have the notes on address we got yesterday, but if you will use the document that we just handed out this morning, there are some things in here that reflect some adjustments. So
it's kind of all the same codes because we did it here, but it's a piece of the military. A little
education.
They're only in the term sense of humor, you know that?
All we're trying to do on page one is set the stage and describe the properties involved and just pretty much lift it out of the RFP and the involved proposal. And then the description of Lot 5, again, we're trying to take out of what you had in your proposal, approximately 400 spaces. And here, this contemplates that it'll be under a portion of Church Street. I understand that that is not yet something that you embrace fully. We understand that. And I think it was put out as an option, as it might reduce the cost under the theory that you wouldn't have to go down as far, and you could blow up Church Street and then deck over it after you got it built. And I think if you're running numbers on that right now. There would be three buildings with retail, commercial on the ground floor, and then 124 for sale residential units is right out of your proposal, the same numbers. We didn't change those. Though I assume that if you left to go higher, you might want to add more units, which would make sense, and that would give to the council, obviously. It would just seem that the more units they are, the better the economics is going to be. And I have to be one of those people that think they're going to sell like crazy. So
we're assuming that, just for edification, that this description leaves for flexibility,
yes,
as we go through the
properties. And again, this should be exactly the square footage and exactly the number of units that you had in the proposal.
Sure, but that would change as the design phase. This is going to make sure it's
so these are really just placekeepers, right? So we get to the
final. Otherwise. And then the council will pass on that, obviously. And then the 20% affordable housing, which I think you call it work.
We call it workforce.
Workforce, yeah.
Right. So in our proposal, we only had about 17.5%.
Right, and I defer to the council on that, and their target, my understanding was 20%.
Well, if you're willing to augment whatever that used to be, it'd be 20% based on the conversation we had 20 minutes ago.
Well, I think we're just going through it at this point.
And then the second, that 32,550 square feet of public space. My understanding is that we've added also condominium common areas as an example. That between the back two buildings, my understanding is that'll probably be something that's owned by the condominium association. So I don't call that true public space, it's condo space, restricted public space, but it's someplace out of that plaza. That's what we're really could be defined as a public space that the town would want known, and it were, you would do the programming for public events, not necessarily back in that back thing. And you all will have to tell us which space is which in terms of which you envision.
Yes. I'm sure that as we get further, we're going to talk about the whole structure.
Right. And then that you provide streetscape, which is what all the developers do, which means you put in the sidewalks, the trees, and whatever goes out, whatever you do out there. The Wallace Day obviously is a state of flux, but you know, we contemplated basically the same thing, that there would be approximately 50 additional parking spaces somehow, and I gather that was another level there.
Just to interject, John, and we plan on doing it here, but I think that the math was off on that, and we probably only needed to add 35. But I'll go through the math with you later or whatever. We'll talk through it.
Right.
I think there was an error on both of our parts.
All right.
And that there would be some commercial. The commercial initially, I think we thought it was going to be on what we call the Rosemary Street lot. That little lot that
mm-hmm.
has a pretty big tree
mm-hmm.
you're going to wipe out.
No, not now.
You may not.
You can say no.
Anyway, that's where we assume that the retail would be. We don't know how many people
right.
or anything like that. And the reference to affordable retail is coming out of your proposal. And whatever that means, we would want to see a translation of that in the actual development agreement. And that you would do the condominium units, again, we don't know how many. It would lap over in the front of Rosemary Street, and then would be built on top of the parking deck. Again, we don't know where the public space again would be. There may be some and there may not be some, and I don't think the town is hung up on that there has to be any public space, any public space in terms of for the general public. Because the design other than that one corner may not be feasible.
And I think our new design sort of reflects that. We can get some of the council.
And that's not something that we, as I understand it, the town is hung up on. Yes.
About the affordable retail on Rosemary Street lot, and that comes out of y'all's proposal?
Well, it's not that what we said was we think it would be more incubator type of space, but it would be more affordable to people who are incubating there.
But is this to be located at the corner of Rosemary and Henderson?
It's
over on lot 5. That's the wrong place.
It's on the Rosemary Street.
And then the financial investment, and from the town standpoint, again, this is just down to the fundamentals of something that's important to the town, the fact that they have a fixed development amount that they would invest, which you all would have to determine as you walk through the budget, which is you and John will be working on. And basically what we would be doing is how it would be couched is we're paying you to build for us an underground parking garage and to build for us whatever number of expansion spaces are in the Wallace Deck and the public space, and we're paying you as like we would pay any developer or contractor to build those items for us. And it's important that we own those since it's basically public money. And so that's what the whole concept of the financial investment of the town is, that one, they own something, and secondly, that their risk be limited, that they know they can count and look at the count and say, this is what it's going to cost to hear this. And so that's real significant, clearly, for the town. Then the next section is we took what was in your proposal and left it like that, which was the proposal that there would be, and this was in response to the RFP too, that you all proposed that there would be a 40-year lease of the retail and a 99-year lease of the residential. And laid on top of that a requirement, or a very strong requirement, of the town that they own the parking garage and the parking. We came up with, keeping it consistent with your proposal, that we would condominiumize the dirt, so to speak, and you would add one condominium unit on lot size would be on the surface of the ground below, that would be where the parking garage was built. So the condominiumized the surface in order to take into account the true public space, not the restricted public space, but the true public space. That would be a condominium unit. Those two condominium units would be owned by the town. We would create a footprint, and it could be bigger than a footprint, to incorporate the restricted common areas for each of the buildings. And you have a condominium unit that starts at ground level and goes to an elevation that conforms to the top of retail. And that airspace in there, that would be a condominium unit, would be leased for 40 years, and that's where you would build the retail. And we would create another condominium unit on top of that, which would start at the top of the retail and go to the top of the roof. And in that airspace, you would sub-condominiumize that, and that would be your residential condominiums, which would be sold, and that would be a 99-year lease.
So do you contemplate that the leases, that the condominium would be created prior to the leases and prior to construction?
No. What we would do is we would create those blocks of airspace in advance and do those leases. And because you have to, then once you had your lease of the air rights, for example, where the condominiums were built, then you would do your own condominium documents to subcondominiumize that space and build and sell the units. So we would do the surface condominium that would create the blocks of airspace. And typically, when we've done this in the past, you do the lease, and then you obviously, when you get through design development and you're down to the hard documents, we would amend them so that we got the elevations correct. Because I've never had one get the elevations correct the first time around. So that you're comfortable that it's going to really be this many feet above sea level, it's going to be the top of the retail.
So in comments throughout here, it appears that the town-owned units would not be leased to RAM.
No.
But yet RAM would be building the improvements.
For which is the same.
So we would, do you contemplate that we would not get construction financing for that? That it would be money that would be placed in escrow by the town that would in essence be our construction loan funds, and upon delivery of satisfactory lien waivers and so forth, we would draw from that?
It could be one of two ways, Holly. Let's just use numbers so I can deal with that. If let's say that lot 5 is 50 million.
Mm-hmm.
And let's say that the parking debt is 10 million. So you've got, another just, again, at least 40 and 10, you put the two together. Then you determine what kind of financing you can get in total. Let's say you get 80% financing. So you've got 80% of $50 million. Look at it as a total block. So that's your total financing. Then you're going to figure out what your equity is. If you want to leave the parking deck completely off and just draw out of the money we would put in escrow, that's one way to do it. We thought, or at least I thought, that probably you're going to be building the parking deck, but also doing things that are going to relate to the, what you all are going to own, so to speak, the retail and the stuff above it. And so the theory was, you put your equity in escrow, we put our money in escrow, and then we draw it out on a pari passu basis. If ours represents 50%, yours represents 50%, and that money's going to have to be spent first, but that would be spent dollar for dollar on the same basis. but that ours would remain unencumbered. You would encumber your leasehold estate and all that sort of thing. If you want to do it the other way, I think you could do that. You come out from where you would, in effect, use our money to build just the garage and stuff.
Okay. So, am I correct in hearing that the town is willing to contribute, its contribution will be a rough estimate, as close as we can get it in our budget numbers, to the cost of the parking and the public area?
We would put that in an escrow. And you would put your equity in an escrow. What's important for us is to see that the finance you have, your equity, and our dollars will build that project.
The key point for us, Lynn, is that money's got to come.
That money's coming from you.
Well, it's our equity contract. It's our prepaid rent that funds a significant portion of your contribution.
And in the end, we hope that all of these transactions are going to net out so that it funds all of our contributions.
So in effect, you would pay the rent and live the instantaneous that we go into the escrow again.
Right. I think the numbers indicate that there is a gap, but we're hoping that
based on the model at that time. And we're hoping that you can help us figure out a way to close that gap and eliminate it.
But we'll be working together to do that.
Right. Okay. John's biggest job is to eliminate that gap in a manner that you find acceptable.
It is a complicated structure, but it's doable.
My concern is that to the extent we have funding our portion of the contribution, a significant portion will come from institutional lenders. And an institutional lender is going to be, in my mind, I haven't found many that are willing to loan money without receiving the improvements that are being built with that money as collateral. And that's where
then the alternative is we would simply take our money and set it over here, and it only goes for our improvements, so it's never done. And then you do the other, it comes out the same place from our standpoint.
Okay.
And if you end up with instead of 75% or 80% financing, 50% financing, then your equity component is going to be a lot bigger than what you're paying in prepaid rent, and then you might want to go on a period of tax free basis. But either way, it would work.
I think my concern is really also borne out by the fact that my understanding of the numbers and how we arrived at some of the numbers, the formula contemplated the hard cost of the replacement parking, and that the balance of the parking would be retained by the developer for use for the residential and the retail.
Well, and our feeling is because we're not selling fee simple for that part, we don't want to get two things. We think that the town's money is spent, we have to own the asset. For one thing, that's an asset that down the road, if we wanted to issue bonds, we've got something we could issue cops on. But the idea that we would bifurcate the ownership of the debt when the ownership of the rest of the improvements are going to disappear depending upon the lease term leads to a problem. If you get a license to use the spaces, we think you come out the same way, but we don't get in to the issues of dual ownership.
I think we definitely need to think about this. I guess my concern, Glenn, is that the price, the contribution amount that is set forth in the proposal represents the town having control over a smaller portion of the debt rather than the full debt.
But it doesn't represent the full cost of the debt.
No.
No, it doesn't.
No, we're just 173 feet.
Well, it's also for the delta to go underground, so that the town can end up with a
cover. I recognize it's a delta going.
But no, the town is only participating on 173 spaces.
And only the hard cost, not the soft cost, and there's a differential of about $8,000 per space.
What are you picking this on?
The soft cost.
Probably 25. So with all the soft costs and everything, it's not 33.
It's
32.8,
isn't it? Something like
31.8. That's a lot of money.
That's a lot of money. That's something we just have to talk about. The alternative is you condominiumize after spaces. But instead of the town we own some, you all own some, but then that gets into the problem of a debt that's got two different owners, one of whom will basically be exiting the project at a point in the future.
Well, there will actually be three owners. There's the retail ownership, the condo ownership, and the town ownership.
I would never let the condo owners own a parking space, ever. I give them a license, but it's just it's a nightmare down the road if you want, when you get into having to maintain the decks and things like that, if you've got to deal with each one of them as an individual owner.
But you wouldn't deal with them as individual owners, you deal with the condos. And you set all that up in your condo documents.
I just put against that. I like licenses, but that's just my personal view.
Okay. And then with respect to the public space, I think it's anticipated, with respect to the public space, in talking with Ivy, I really heard that one of the goals is to have this space be space that can be somewhat more controlled than general public space, so that you have a little bit better control on your programming, on your ability to have folks who are not conducting themselves in an orderly, adult manner removed from the area. And I guess the question or the thought process was that if it is privately owned space with a license to the town, the private owner still ultimately can exercise private ownership rights to control activity. And what I heard was that was
one of the control negative activity,
right, to reduce that, eliminate that, or minimize that. And that could be accomplished pretty effectively by having that public space be owned by a private entity other than the town, and then licensed or subleased. License is probably better because it's going to be used by both to the town for the programming.
This is something that's extremely important for the council, because I think you probably saw the design plan.
Right.
And we have probably as much discussion about that as any aspect of this. I think and the way this is written now, there's got a couple of components. We would like you all to maintain it. We think you'll maintain it at a higher level than a municipality would normally do. We understand that. And the standards we have suggested is you maintain the public areas to the same standard as the restricted common areas are maintained, so that you have a uniformity in there. And it's kind of that we would maintain it good, but you all will maintain it active better because you've got retail tenants in there and you've got residences in there. And we would have to come up with a means of making sure that there was funds available, not only to maintain it, but particularly to renovate it down the road before looking at the long term. And one of the things we've noticed in projects is when a unit sold 1% of the sale price or something, goes into a special fund, a capital fund, so that you can continue to maintain those on a long-term basis. So that's the first element. The second element of it was the town is prepared to hire an event coordinator that would be just what I take to be their primary function to do this. But during the first 2 years, you all would do the programming to kind of set the stage. This would be the time when you're selling out the condos and you know, trying to get stabilized in the retail. But with input from the town, and the town's coordinator would be involved. But after that, a significant amount of the programming, the town would have primary responsibility, with you all providing input. Also looking at Church Street as being part of the so-called public space and the they envision, the town envisions, that would be periodically closed off and there would be things out there so that we would expand what is built there out into a larger area, which obviously they would have to do. But, and then, and you're correct that there's more than just removing bad people and stuff like that. I mean, you get into First Amendment rights and everything else.
I think we have a set of rules and regulations for our town parks, and I would think that if we look at some of those, I mean, we're not talking about like public right-of-way where our authority is less than it would be the public property. We have some rules and regulations for town parks about trespassing people under certain circumstances and types of behavior that we allow in town parks. I think part of what you're concerned about may be addressed by some kind of standard with that, but then it turns out that right at some point, this isn't going to be like a designated public forum, say like the Army Post Office, but it is going to be public property where there are these kinds of things that if it is public space, we'll have to deal with that you are, if it was private space, probably just control that.
And I think that's what, we were talking about. We have two things going on here, that yes, this is a very important public space in the town, but there's also going to be retailers and residential people living here in Bipede. So there has to be a very strong measure of control over these spaces to accomplish both of those goals. In fact, that's what we were envisioning on some basis. Not just maintenance, but overall that we would have the ability and incentive to do that better than the town would. With making sure that the town, and you know, how we accomplish this in terms of ownership or whatever doesn't, is not as important as
the
end result is to make sure that, you know, we're able to do that.
But tied to that is the public arts component of it, and the main, because that's going to be very much part of the public space and the maintenance of the public arts, and
a lot of the cost is going to be centered in the public space. That,
and they're going to be so almost intertwined in certain aspects of it that
it may be hard to allocate the cost of that public art among our private space and that public unit.
But I think that's why we're envisioning some kind of license agreement and then some kind of operating, you know, as part of the license agreement, a pro rata share of cost or whatever in terms of maintaining those types of spaces.
And I think our proposal talked about for $10 a year, that space would be licensed back to the town, and the town would contribute toward 50% of the maintenance cost. But that the owner would maintain that
responsible for executing that.
Mm-hmm. Because there are a lot of retail owners that have areas that turn into quasi-public spaces and are operated that way, that those management companies have that expertise in maintaining. But I think we are have a consensus with respect to as far as what we're looking for.
Yeah, we just maybe a way to do it right that meets the town's objectives.
Right.
This is very complicated.
Right.
And the town is going to be very concerned about First Amendment issues associated with this space, and as well as the ongoing costs and maintenance in programming. So I'm not sure there's a consensus at this point.
The consensus on which item?
The regulation of behavior, on whether to let the private people have police power over this area as far as it is.
Like security, right?
Mm-hmm. I don't think that we're looking for this to be like the indoor common area in the University Mall.
Right, but I guess the question is, what if you have vagrants and panhandlers, and that's the First Right Amendment, mm-hmm. right? I mean, free speech, or whatever that may be. I mean, are you saying that shouldn't be controlled, or?
I think that what Ralph said is that you may be very happy with the code of conduct in our parks. I think it might be an ongoing enforcement issue.
Okay.
Well,
once you get this written, this may be a non-issue based on however it's written for their public parks in terms of that small piece of it.
This is going to be an issue. I don't think we should gloss over this. It's going to be an important issue. And we have to figure out the right way to handle it. And the council previously, I think, said we don't want to sanitize this area. It's not intended to be Disneyland.
And I don't think we're looking to do that either, to maintain decorum
You're going to have panhandlers on the sidewalk in front of that building.
Right, which we won't be able to do anything
about. You're not going to be able to do anything about that.
Right.
And you're going to have people that some would consider to be vagrants, and we just consider them to be citizens, sitting on a bench in the public sidewalk area. And they may be dressed in a manner that looks peculiar, their behavior may be peculiar.
Right.
And you're not going to be able to do anything about that either. The definition of a regulated area is going to be critically important, and the extent to which the park behavior rules that now exist will solve the problem, I don't know, because I don't remember what all those problems are at this point.
Okay.
When you look at them, you may say, nope, that won't do it, we need some modification. But this is not going to go away. It's going to be something we all have to deal with.
Okay, and then just so that you understand from the, from the private side, which I'm sure you all understand, you're going to have retail people, why am I to leave here and why should I live here if the ordinance is as a public park where anybody can come and go and we have no rights to, so.
We appreciate it's in an urban environment. We're not contemplating sanitizing it.
Right.
But, when you have this much public space, in our experience,
mm-hmm.
Especially if there's any kind of water feature in it, you're going to have vagrant people bathing and sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
And so, how are we prepared to... Handling is fine. Lawyering is fine. It's when there's a continual problem and how willing... what do you have in place now that helps facilitate that's not an acceptable behavior?
Does it interfere with the restaurateur who wants people sitting there and right there, you've got somebody getting disturbed, but we have the right to help. So we will
take some work because I think when we look at those rules, they're not going to be as comprehensive as you might want. And so we're going to need to hear your suggestions about that.
Okay.
And then I think another challenge is, from a marketing standpoint, the concept that people who are living and the retailers who are operating their business would actually be paying for that public space rather than it being general tax dollars.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
That would be a mark. Yeah. I think that would be an obstacle. Mm-hmm. And a challenge in marketing, not only for the initial sale, but for the resale. If they know that upon the sale of their unit, that 1% of their sales price that they have to contribute to a public park, that they don't...
It's almost like an unfair burden for the
people who are living there. I don't view that as they're getting the benefit of that space. They're getting it as view sheds, they're getting it as airspace, they're getting it as recreation space, and there's a counter argument for that, too.
But anybody that lives next to the park doesn't, a private resident who lives next to any other parking capital doesn't pay it.
this is unlike any other park in Chapel Hill. This is a created space that is unlike any other in Chapel Hill. It exists only because of the collaboration between the private and public sector. There's a counter argument there, I think. I understand what you're saying, but I don't completely buy it.
I think it's difficult to explain to the average purchaser because we
are. These are not going to be average purchasers. People who buy into these properties are going to be different than average just by the fact that they're interested in living in this area.
Sure, but then you also have the added burden of ground rent, which can go away, which is hard marketing issue. So I think. Without
wanting
to talk through that, but I do think
that
my place and I feel
burdened
in terms of
getting
anything
shown. Equally important in the marketing aspect of the public space is being very specific on something that's not yet decided for an ongoing basis on how it's going to be maintained. I live there, I want to know that green is going to be green and not a mud hole because everybody ran out of money. And that, you know, so it's not just who's going to pay for it, but what exactly is the standard it's going to be maintained to? That's going to be very important in the marketing for, probably more so for the retailers who are counting on someone opening a sandwich shop because you can buy them and sit on that bench over there.
Mm-hmm. It's really more public private. I'll give you some examples of what's going on around the country, and maybe that'll help you if you both spoke a copy of it.
Okay.
This isn't the first time this has come up.
I'm sure that's true.
Well, it's always nice to see other people's creative solutions.
Yep.
We do have people taking banks in Bank of America. A lot of features in all of their office buildings.
I guess that could be
that
they do
nothing
about
it.
They get
cleaned up. Yeah. Their view is that it creates a bigger issue in the media if they do something about it.
It does. There's no doubt.
So they do nothing.
Right.
And they start there and they just ignore it. And they just don't let them do it if they're fine. Yeah.
But that's their place of business. It's not their place of residence. So there's an emotional attachment.
They have company and joy with the moment.
Okay. So if you have to come home to live there, they just get out for breakfast in the morning at the cafe.
Well, that makes it especially important, I think, to be careful about the definition of the public space.
Because I think some of that will be difficult. Like we talked about in council, you know, having this as public space, and this is almost like semi-public space. Right, I mean, we already talked about those too, but that maybe some of the definitions may be difficult.
You just have to work on it. I can imagine that in that so-called semi-public space, there might be a different set of rules that apply than there would be in the public space.
Right.
Clearly would be a different set of rules in the private space.
Right.
And I think all of these things are capable of solution. As to this development, but when you cross the magic line from this development onto the public right-of-way, then we're not going to bargain with you an awful lot about that, I don't think, because I don't believe we can. I think that's regulated by the law, and we know the law pretty well, and it's just a different set of issues when we get there.
You mean that the right-of-way?
Yeah.
We're fine with it,
okay. I just want to make sure you
know it's anything outside the boundaries.
We know it's an urban environment, okay? We understand all that there's pluses and minuses. Yeah. We don't have any problem with that.
Yeah, I just want to, you know, the political reality is that this issue is going to be scrutinized very carefully. There will be a large group of citizens that feel as if we're taking something that is public and privatizing it, and there's going to be, the way this is done and written is going to be, it's going to be very important to the community.
It's going to be really looked at hard.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Now, some people think it's a great way to do it, and who would urge the council to just let the private sector absolutely control it, but I don't think that will be the prevailing sentiment in the council's discussions, or in the community. And so we do have to do a care plan, but I think it can be done.
Okay.
Right, it's hard to put an economic value on it, but I do think psychologically the community, the public aspect of this is has a very high value.
Right.
Yeah. And giving that up,
ownership
is extremely complex. I don't know ownership, I know access.
Okay, I understand. So if there was something, like Cal suggested, that there's a different set of rules for the first phase, and maybe the rules get tighter as you get back or something like that,
there's would be something that the community can understand. And the rules get tighter, the person goes towards private.
And would there be some, this is really more of a question, for the public at large, who shouldn't be seeing these documents and doesn't know that there's this continuum, would you envision that the Chapel Hill Police Force would maybe be in the fully public area maintaining safety and patrolling, and that in the semi-private public you would have
The more private it gets, the more reasonable it is for that to be regulated by private security.
Okay.
The more public it gets, the less reasonable it is for that to occur.
Okay.
And I don't know where to draw that line. The challenge is figuring out where that line is.
And I'm sure that you already have some parameters as to what the police do now in Chapel Hill, what they do or don't do.
Sure.
Okay.
And we've regularly gone private property for the purpose of enforcing the law. And sometimes we do that with the owner's permission and prior agreement, and with an agency to act on the owner's behalf. And so that kind of thing can be worked out as well.
Okay. The programming for that semi-public thing is going to be, from a marketing standpoint, the important part, that you're not going to have rock concerts there after 8 o'clock at night, mm-hmm. that it's going to be for gallery space, mm-hmm. or food market space is acceptable, but that we're not going to have outdoor symphonies outside of somebody's window until 2:30 in the morning. So it's how we define what's acceptable in terms of activity, programmed mm-hmm. activity level, because I think you're right, the retail spaces are going to encroach upon that, and they're going to want to own parts of the sidewalk for an outdoor cafe, and that's going to start mm-hmm. to define in practicality what that space can or cannot be used for. But it's how it gets programmed is going to be important, equally important to the residents of those towers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we're all on the same page. It's mm-hmm. a matter of whether these issues are valid and important and have enormous impact to your economic
assessment. So would one task be for RAM to define, take this master plan and enlarge it and start defining the spaces? That's on the spectrum of public to private?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
I mean, what you just said is very, these shop owners are going to want outdoor patio space, cafe space. That's, you should probably start defining what that position is.
If it's on the public right of way, we've got an ordinance that tells them what they can do about that. If you want to modify the ordinance, we could. I'm thinking more about the spacing here.
That is a good point. We as RAM need to understand what the ordinance is if somebody wants to stick tables and chairs on the Franklin Street corridor.
But we can blow this up and say, okay, this, we envision this state having these kinds of uses and these kinds of hours of operation, and this state has these kinds of uses and these kinds of operations, and there's some private ownership or license onto that for the retailers to be able to use this space right out in front for tables and chairs or whatever they want.
Well, could we handle that very simply by having the condominium unit described with the boundary to be that
it
would be a limited common area, but it would be a limited common area pertinent to that unit that would be
right
around the periphery.
Yeah, sure.
So, so that we would have full control.
Yes.
Control.
That would define the private use area. Uh-huh. And you can make it part of the public art project by having the granite strip.
And you put it in the granite strip area is plastic.
Why do you want to, what's the concept of condominiumizing the public space? For ownership?
Ownership, right.
Ownership for the town.
Right. And we're distinguishing from that, what Holly just did.
Yeah, I understand.
That'll be in the condominium association.
I understand.
Well, by the unit owners, when they come out.
Maybe in that back area, I just thought that might be just plain old, everybody can use it. Yeah. Okay. You might have some of that in front.
Do you contemplate that each unit owner, the parking garage unit owner, the public space, for lack of a better word, town-owned unit, retail unit owner, and residential unit owner would all be a member of the same one master condominium association?
No, they would all probably be subject to a number of...
By virtue of restrictive covenants?
Yeah.
I don't understand why we just don't feed that public space back to the town and not have the project to the ground that can be done with it.
But it wouldn't be subject to the ground.
Yeah, so I'm not sure why it's in a condominium unit as opposed to you just own it. The town just owns it. It's not subject to any covenants. It's not subject to any maintenance. I mean, it's all maintenance, but I don't understand the advantage of it being in a condominium unit as opposed to you just own it like you own any other park.
Right, we would. It's already in the condominium so that we can create the airspace blocks so that you can do the 40-year lease and the 99-year leases separate from the other. And whatever you resolve on the parking, you may have to condominiumize the underground parking so that you own part, we own part.
Okay.
It's just how you splice it up.
Okay.
But you all need to...
Our interest, I think, is in having a structure that the attorneys believe will be workable for the long haul and it recognizes the separate interests of the parties and doesn't interfere with them. And it sounds like Lynn is saying there are several ways of accomplishing that.
We can, obviously, when we have time to regroup after today, we can sort of talk through, you know, get a better understanding where you are and then we can sort of respond.
Excellent, yes. You heard John's concept.
Yeah, I did.
And then as to the regulation of activity, in the end, we're going to retain ownership of all of this. And so when you talk about ownership, I'm sitting here thinking what that really says is who regulates what? Who has the right to regulate?
Right.
And so we need to be careful about defining the areas where you have a virtually unfettered right to regulate, in areas where we virtually have an unfettered right to regulate, and in the areas where we have to reach agreement with each other about what the regulation is going to be and how to be established and modified and that kind of thing. Is that consistent with the way you're thinking about this, Holland?
That's along the same lines. It's along the same lines. I was actually sort of thinking in my mind, too, about other agreements that would be necessitated by this structure.
Mm-hmm.
As far as maintenance and operating agreements and how that would work.
One of the things that's going to be our real concern, and while we're getting the condominium documents, certainly the residential, we recognize that the owners can change that. So we're going to want to put your CCR's long-term maintenance obligations, just fundamental, not anything out of the ordinary, but so that the town's got the right to ensure that everything is being maintained. Because we're not talking about a 10-year project or a 20-year project. We're talking about a long-term project. And as has been pointed out to me, there are a lot of houses in Chapel Hill that are more than 80 years old. So a 99-year condominium is something that will need to be maintained over 99 years.
Are you not confident that if we take care of that, in condo docks and other...
I view the condo docks and the CCRs as basically containing the same thing, but...
CCRs, Credence Clearwater Revival.
Yes. And they will be playing out on Church Street all of the Thursdays from 9 to 2.
It was CCR.
Covenant Commission of Scripture. That they were married, so that we don't want to take a chance of a condominium association undoing something. But they're not intended to be a cross purpose. It's just to be another level to make sure that the town can enforce the maintenance obligations as well as the condo association.
But doesn't the town, what does it mean, the ground lease?
The ground lease would be between us and you, not us and you.
So if the unit owner is buying a condominium portion of the ground lease.
That's right.
So
you add it there too. We just want to make sure it's maintained.
From a practical standpoint, it seems like that might be more, provide a little bit more flexibility for the party, since we don't know what we really might want to do in 70 years.
Or the kind of chop a hole that we're doing.
Yeah, I'm not saying that. Yeah. I mean, all of us, not
for 50 years. Or
I'm worried about that too.
Right.
From a marketing standpoint, being practical, okay, so I'd like to regard this kind of meaning that now it's subject to gravity. It's subject to the CCNR. It's subject to, we don't control the public space. It's subject to our 1%, you got to still maintain the public space. It's subject to this, it's subject to that, but you're really going to enjoy living here, I promise.
And by the way, it costs a lot of money.
As we do this, yes, they aren't normal people, and yes, they're sophisticated, or they wouldn't be buying an air right from the sky. And yes, they want to be in Chapelville, and yes, they want to. They desire the urban lifestyle, and they understand the benefits and the negatives of living an urban lifestyle. The longer this checklist becomes, as an attorney, you know.
I like buying a co-op in New York.
As an attorney, you know that you're going
to
say,
I know that the sophistication of level of people buying here are not New York.
And as an attorney, you're going to say to your client, I just want you to know you're buying a subject to a ground lease. That means yada, yada, yada. And I want you to understand this, and that means yada, yada, yada. And I'm going to say to you, so you tell me that about it?
No, no, we'll say it yet, but it's in Chapel too.
I want to bring something up, which Chris and I had a little bit of discussion for the ERN. When we contemplated in the RFP the 40-year on the retail and the 99 on the condo units, we didn't really focus on the 40-year on the retail. It was sort of, you know, we presented it as operating operations. It was too hard to look at a longer stream and all of that stuff. Yeah, based on what the RFP asked for, essentially it is more of a struggle to do 40-year on the retail for all kinds of reasons, financing and everything. It makes sense to have everything consistent as 99 years. I think Chris talked about it briefly with John, and we had put it into the RN, but we did the 99 years for retail and condo, I think. That's what I... Right, so I just want to make sure that we're on the same page as we keep saying 40, that 99 works for you guys. That's the first issue.
Well, how the 40 came about is because it's impossible to do a pro forma for 99 years. So 40 years was the number in the RFP, you know, to provide a cash flow or a pro forma for 40 years, and that's how we got to the...
And we didn't really make it clear
number
in our RFP that for consistency's sake and financing and everything, it really needed to be the same for both.
Right.
So that was
our
not spelling it out.
What's the life expectancy of a building these days?
From an IRS standpoint?
No.
From an actual building standpoint?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, in urban environments, 125 years, even for a high rise, is not unheard of. In this kind of environment, you know, they're structurally built to last for over 100 years if they're maintained, depending on the materials. It's going to be a LEED building, which means there's going to be a lot of that that's going to be forefront, you know, at the forefront of the industry, which means it's going to, you know, it's going to age better or be more economic.
Well, how old are the buildings on Franklin Street?
Well, we got buildings in our community that's been here well over 100 years. It's just depends on how they're built.
Maintain.
Right.
It's not just
that
over time,
the condo is
still
to
tell.
That's true. I stand
corrected. Yeah, the comparable
right.
Here would be buildings on campus.
Right.
Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the most substantial buildings we have. Some of them are 200 years old.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd say they're built, I mean, I don't know, they've torn down a few, and they're about to tear down a couple more, but that's not so much because of the utility of their location. So, I mean, I think 100 years is perfectly reasonable.
Somewhere between 70 and 100 is what I would tell you.
Yeah. I'd like to hear from John and Glenn, who've been silent.
What that change is.
Mm-hmm. Well, we were thinking 40-year term at least. When we were early. But we just say that's the life of the book. Well, we thought the life of second year of building these days, and that you could get financing based on 40 years.
Well, but theoretically, you do have the condos on top of the retail, and that does need to be consistent.
Our thought was that you all would probably do 7 to 10 years out, 12 years out. You would sell the retail. And that would still be, I think, 30 years and 15.
Sure, I mean, on a standalone, absolutely. We didn't contemplate it as an issue. Obviously, there's a different set of marketing issues with retail. You do have a much more sophisticated buyer than a condo unit. But we're building on top of each other.
That was a residual benefit that they would have at the end of 40 years. They would own the retail and they could either resell it for another 40 years or whatever, or master lease it to a private developer and then lease the label and retail or what have you. That is an economic thing. As I understood,
right. Right. I should probably hold this thought until after lunch, but that, I think, leads to what we realized when we were reading the Memorandum of Understanding is that maybe we weren't as clear as we needed to be to convey a concept relative to the retail components,
right,
as we needed to be. And so if you want me to leave you hanging, I will, or if you'd like me to go further, I will.
I'm ready to eat.
Okay.
What?
These are all the same, so you can talk to them before. You can have the ones that we offer you.
Thank you. Does anybody want to come to the
table? I'll try to say it.
If you need the day that you're here,
she goes home and works out.
Oh, the one with a little sweet ball?
Usually I do have the one. Or I'm the one.
Look at that.
You can't get any job done.